Wes, how you doing, buddy?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
I'm really excited to talk to you, man. I have spent a long time excited to talk to a bunch of people that I just barely missed when I moved to school. So I moved there in 2008. You and a bunch of other really cool people just like took off right when I got there. I met a few of you. And so many of you have had such interesting experiences that I'm interested to talk about because I'm like, oh yeah, I remember seeing that guy once real quick.
That's why I took off, because I heard you had just gotten there and I was like, really, I needed to run away.
It is wild to me how many times I've heard that.
Yeah, just as far away from you as possible. I'd heard the rumors.
Right, and what conclusions to draw from it, I can't imagine at this point. But I'm glad to talk to you now. I only really have one question that is stock on this show that I always ask everybody and usually start the show with, which is, where are you from, bud?
I am from Orlando, Florida.
Like born and raised, or just born or just raised?
Technically, no, I was born in New Jersey, but I don't really count New Jersey because I was only there for about 3 weeks. And then at like 1 month old, we had been moved down to Orlando. I say we, my sister was 3 years older than me, and they raised us in O-Town for 18 years. And then I went to School of the Arts.
What made the jump? Like, why move a baby at 3 weeks? It must have been something pretty like, we have to do this. Usually don't like jump at the chance to relocate a baby.
Oh, I think they met and fell in love in upstate New York. They went to this little Bible college. They were both preacher's kids, and they ended up at Nyack College. And then had some babies while they were in college. And
how many? Just the two of you that you mentioned?
Just the two of us. And my grandparents, I guess, were sort of helping out. They got a house in New Jersey for a couple of years. And when I was born a few weeks later, they were like, you know what? Let's fresh start, clean slate. Let raise these kids in a wholesome, family-centric, like, you know, warm place in the sun. And so
it really makes a lot of sense. But when you think about that, I'm curious if you've ever asked them more about that decision, because that seems like quite a big thing. And I love all of the great ideas that are baked into that. But it seems like something would push you to be like, you know what? Not necessarily something bad, but like, you know what? We've wanted to do it for a while, or work maybe makes sense.
You know, I wish there was some clearer answer, but I think my parents have always been adventurers, and they do.
I love that.
Yeah,
my folks are kind of like that too.
They make big, bold choices in their lives, and when I graduated from college, they moved to China, of all places, for a couple of years. So
they are kind of wild hair people. Like, let's go.
That's right. So Disney World was the upbringing.
Right. Absolutely. So what are your folks doing for a living at this? Like, what are their trades that you're? And I always ask that because people, I feel like when you're a kid, you are observing your parents first as your example of what it means to be an adult, a person, all that kind of stuff. Right. And what they tell you they have to leave you for every day is a thing that I think makes an impression on us in a weird way that I don't know. I don't figure out. My wife's the therapist, not me. But like, it's just interesting to me because every day your parents leave you and they say, I have to go away. And you're like, why? And like, because I have to go to work. And you accept that. And then later they tell you what that means. And so like, what were they leaving for? What did they go do?
What did your parents leave you for?
I found a fun way to phrase it, haven't I?
Interesting. No, my mom has been a music teacher her whole life.
That's awesome.
So she went to school for music, and so that's been her trade my whole existence. And then my dad, sort of very, very polar opposite of my mom, sort of changes his occupation every couple of years, gets bored and moves on to something else. So
what's on the list? I'm so excited.
I mean, so many things. He's been a PE teacher. He's been a stockbroker. He's been a hospitality manager at theme parks. He's been adaptive teacher for adaptive students. He's been oh my god,
Quaker baker, candlestick maker.
Sure. Yeah. all the things.
It's a lot of good stuff.
Right now he's like got his own cleaning company that he's running and managing, and they go to businesses in Orlando. So
it seems like that might set you up, and I don't know if I'm just like a shot in the dark, but it seems like maybe that would set you up later for like moving on to other things quickly without being totally heartbroken about it. Do you think that's any easier for you, like as far as like theater? Because I know that's easy for me just in my personal life. I move past things a little bit easier because I moved a lot as a kid, and I've been doing, you know, theater and TV forever, and the project always goes away.
Yeah, it's interesting. I find that my mom and I are more aligned in how we operate and how we're wired, and that we're very myopic and very driven and focused on sort of, we have a lot of perseverance towards one avenue. And not to say that I don't consider myself this sort of multi-hyphenate who also does, you know, I write and I direct and I produce and, you know, do all these other than act, but my sister and my dad are the type of people who really do sort of get bored every few years and need to reinvent and figure out what else is knocking or calling them. No, my mom and I are more wired to sort of stay on the path. I wanted to be an actor when I was a child and got an agent in Orlando at 9 years old and was auditioning and doing dinner theater and voiceovers and industrials and all that. So this was a thing that I've always known.
What's the kid performer life community like in Orlando? I bet it's popping, right? There's some like a lot of kids out there trying to make something happen, more than maybe I think a lot of other mid-sized cities like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's popping in comparison to what, Milwaukee, but it's
right, that's what I'm saying. It's not LA or New York, but it is a place where I bet it's like you're not the only kid in the audition room every weekend, right?
No, you're right. And I had much more opportunity, than the average kid in a flyover state or something. But I also was super jealous of the kids in LA. And
of course, there's always somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. And I was such a little brat to my parents. Just was like, we need to move to Hollywood so that I can be opposite Macaulay Culkin. Why does he get to do all these things that I don't? And they were like, you know, we have lives, we have jobs, we have careers of our own. We're not just going to drop everything to fulfill your dream. And I'm like, well,
that's right. Dad has like 12. So we got a lot of work to do.
So much to keep track of here. No, but I was such a little shit. I was just like, you know, I didn't choose to be born. You guys decided to have a kid who happens to have gifts.
Right. It's not your fault. You're talented.
Okay. You're squandering my gifts. And if you want me to realize my full potential, then you will make me a star right now.
Okay, here's a fun question I have. I'm excited about this. So you're the kid, you're like, what's up with this Culkin kid? I love that because I'm like of that same age too. It's like, what? I'm being from Austin, Texas, I have this weird attachment of being like, that's a weird fantasy world. No matter how funny and talented I am in my little community, I have that flyover mentality of like, I'm not allowed to participate in that. You've got to like live there or be rich or something. I don't know. What is the path? I like can do a play at kindergarten. I don't know how else to get involved with anything.
Right.
But I imagine being in that middle market area where you're like, I know I'm seeing the fruits of what I could be doing. And I know there's a bigger place to do it. So in your head, the youngest you can remember, had you been able to like talk your parents into like, let's move to Los Angeles and let's say all of it worked out the way you had the fantasy, what would that have been at that age?
Let me ask you something. When you were a kid, and you it still seemed like a fantasy land and stuff. Right. Did you take trips to New York? Were you seeing Broadway shows? Okay.
No access.
Okay. Got it. See,
it's all on TV.
I feel like I was really fortunate in that my parents, because they met in New York upstate, they had a lot of connections in New York and they wanted to come back when we were young and visit New York. And, you know, taking the kids into the city for, I don't know, Macy's, you know, Santa Claus or whatever, when we were really young. And then we see our first Broadway shows, you know, at 7, 8, 9 years old, and you're bit with the bug. And it's like that sort of, it's the accessibility between Orlando and Hollywood, Broadway was sort of like I was able to be in the same room as them and look up onto the stage and be like, oh, I can actually attain that. I can actually work towards that and achieve that, which is a little bit more accessible than maybe a Hollywood movie.
It felt tangible because it was literally in your space.
Correct. And I think once my parents realized that like this was the place where we needed to take family vacations, and then like my, you know, they would want to shop or do touristy things, and I would give them the list of Broadway shows we were meant to see. Mm. No, we will not be seeing Mamma Mia. We will be seeing Laura Linney and Liam Neeson in The Crucible. We will be seeing Brenda Blethyn and Edie Falco in Night Mother. We will be seeing, you know, and that insane child is sort of how this all came to be.
Right. I think it's so fascinating, man. And I'll say, like I've said on the show before, I think I've developed a consciousness of this. It wasn't always the plan, but really I think of school and being at School of the Arts as kind of the act two of the story that I want to kind of dig into and talk about. And then I think of, I'm really interested in act one and three, because I feel like two, it's very inside. If you weren't at school with you, I'm going to talk about some play you were in while we were there. I mean, or some class thing. I mean, if there's some like, you know, I always leave room if like there's some great story someone wants to tell, but it's not really about that. It's really right. More about what would cause a person to end up there. And then once they've done what they've been told in that conservatory way and didn't pick any classes and just went to class and did what they were fucking supposed to do, and I'm cast as this, you got it, buddy, like all the way through, you get out, then fucking what? That's the question. Those are the questions to me. So right. I feel like we kind of have a lot of act one kind of scoped out here. And the last thing I want to ask about it is, and I don't ask this a lot, but I'm very curious about you because of what everything you've just said about how young you had all of this in you. Why School of the Arts, man?
Because I didn't get into Juilliard.
Word. That is, you, no, bro, you, that's a list of people with that story. And a lot of them are some of the most talented people I've ever met. I'm not joking. It's dude, it's like crazy. And I am at the end of the day, I'm like, I don't know that it's a better experience. I think right. This being in the bubble outside of the city in this kind of like almost on an island learning this shit, I think there's something fucking special to that. And if I could go back, I wouldn't go to Juilliard. I wouldn't.
You know, I don't know that I would either. But in my high school experience, you know, I went to an arts high school and, you know, we knew of a handful of the competitive schools at the top, and we would take this trip, at least up the East Coast, stop in DC, New York, Chicago, you know, hit the top schools. But I really didn't know about Carnegie Mellon, which is a huge competitor. But I knew about, I don't know, NYU, Juilliard, Roosevelt DePaul, Ithaca, SUNY, Rutgers, Guthrie, CalArts. Those are kind of like the big schools I knew about.
Right.
And to me, it was Juilliard or bust. It was such a myopic view of wanting to go to the best school.
I'm so fucking jealous of this, man. You've had this like since you were a kid, this like certainty about it. And I'm sure over time we're all talking act one here. So we're not relating to this, who you are right now, but just hearing the story of this kid that was like, I know what the fuck I'm headed towards, bro. I have such that this show's not about me as much as it is about you, but it is so, I'm so jealous of that because my experience was so the opposite of like, what the fuck do I do? And my parents were like, we don't know. You should play sports. We're in Texas. I'm like, but I'm terrible. And they're like, yeah, I don't know. Good luck. And for me to end up on this podcast talking to you about how we ended up sharing a similar training and education with these two paths like that.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to me.
Yeah. But, you know, just to offer a different perspective here, I'm not sure that the totally sort of insular, myopic, like focused, I'm not sure that that is more or less superior.
It's not something to be jealous of.
Yeah, because, you know, there is something also about being so flexible and open to what life, where it can
right, lead, of course,
instead of like muscling your path. Because, you know,
but your way kind of worked out, man.
Well,
for what you were trying to do. I mean, you hear this story from you, but like you also like read your resume and it's like, oh, it's a shame it didn't totally at all go the way you planned. I mean, you got a lot of the stuff I think maybe that you were thinking you wanted as a young person. You're on Broadway pretty quick, things like that. So yes. it's not superior, but it seemed to work for you is my point.
I appreciate that. And that is nice to hear. And sure, I have achieved so many goals and dreams and I'm very grateful, but I also, you know, there are dreams that you don't know about that I haven't.
Of course.
You know,
or of like, course you know, there is. And I recognize that, my friend, for the, sure.
The childhood dream of, you know, being on Broadway was so consuming. And then when that happened, it was like, what's next? Jump off a bridge or create new dreams? And, you know, I'm going to be a movie star by 30, you know, and that didn't happen. But it's like,
sure.
You know, it's, We have to create new dreams and goals for ourselves. And yes, a lot of the things did happen. And I am proud of the body of work I've accumulated. But, you know, there have been a lot of hard knocks and a lot of...
Of course. And I don't want to come off as that naive. Like, I'm sure it's been fucking gold, buddy. I mean, I know better than that. But I'm not even trying to kiss ass. I just, in that moment of hearing you lay it out, and the being, you know, kind of almost casting over that myopic view, this kind of cloud, I'm like, but, and yet it kind of worked out for you. It kind of worked, my version worked out for me. You know, my thing was, and the short version, I wanted to get, this is going to sound weird and I judge it away, please. When I was in high school and even leaving high school, I was like, I think I would be happy if I could find a way to get paid to hang out with famous people. I don't want to be famous. I just want to be at the thing, and they don't even have to like me. It could be my job to be there. And I just want to find a way to feel like I'm a part of the fucking thing I've always admired from a distance.
Yeah.
I was in the TV business for about 4 years before I ended up doing 6 seasons on Dancing with the Stars. Mission accomplished, bro. Before 30, same thing. So now you're like, and when you get there, you're like, it certainly wasn't the fucking thing I thought it was going to be, because it never fucking is. Not better, worse, just different. And you're like, now what? So I want to ask you then, in that case, like, where are you at headspace wise as far as like, where are those goals and dreams? And I'm not asking it like it's, you know, something you have to write down in stone. But like, as you drift through a single day of travel between one thing to the other, where does your brain go for fun of like, man, it'd be great if we could.
Yeah. I mean, I've got lots of goals. I've got lots of dreams still. And I think it's healthy to have a lot of things to aim towards. I don't want to like give it all out to you right now because I am superstitious about, about keeping some things close to my chest.
I can appreciate that.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think, you know, I have two paths right now, which is like my life as an actor and then my life as a creator, with Alex. Alex is my other half, Alex Weiss, my co-writer and co-director. And we have several projects in the wings right now. One play that's just been attached to a director and we're sort of shopping for the star. And then the two other movies that we have, in pre-production land, funding, legal, and optioning. And those are all really exciting things in the works. And I have like, you know, I want Alex and I to keep making movies and plays. And, you know, I have some specific goals for us and more ideas. And I just want to keep making movies with him. I mean, we made our first feature last year and, or 2 years ago. And we learned a shit ton about making movies, and we want to just like, you know, have a second try from everything that we've learned. But as an actor, it's different. You know, I just wrapped Only Murders in the Building season 3, and I just loved being on set, on someone else's set, so much, because it's been a second since I've actually not been on my own set, but on someone else's set again. And how freeing it was to just be the actor and not have to answer 8 million questions at all times and approve all these things. And, you know, the hardest thing I've ever done was direct that movie. And it is really refreshing and lovely to, you know, find the simplicity of acting again. And so I dream of, you know, just from the acting standpoint, you know, being a regular on a hit show that I adore and on the hiatuses doing a Broadway play. And so lots of dreams and goals. And that's a really roundabout, boring answer instead of giving you like a definitive black and white juicy soundbite.
Hey man, you know what is great is this show is still so under listened to that I don't give a shit about that. It means nothing to me. We're in the double digits sometimes, baby.
Oh shit.
It's don't even trip. No, that's not, and that's a sarcastic way of me saying I loved that answer. I think that that's exactly the thing, and I think that that's something. Maybe this is kind of the capper of it, of the, you know, we only have so much time, but I really want to get your thoughts on this last thing. I feel like what you just described is what a lot of people, I went to the showcase thing in LA last night with the soiree afterwards.
Oh man,
that's a longer conversation. The short version of it was no one in LA ever goes to anything. And even in New York, it feels like, I don't know. It's a weird dynamic. The whole alumni network is kind of strange. I'll say this, my wife and I sat there for like a half hour starting when it started. No one showed up. Everyone showed up like 45 minutes to an hour after it started.
The showcase was happening.
No, not the showcase, the cocktails afterwards. I was shooting yesterday for the TV show that I work on, so I couldn't go to the showcase itself. But either way, I was talking to the kids and what they wanted to do. And what you just described of the kind of, I have almost a seasonal thing and I get to do these different areas that are all interesting to me. They seem hungry for that exact kind of experience, at least at this point in their 22-year-old mindset of where they're at. They're like, that sounds great. Let's spend the fall on a play, winter in a movie, blah, blah, blah. What do you think is the, first of all, I think let's get it out of the way. I'm going to take it for granted. The path to that kind of lifestyle is long. You have to build up your skill sets and relationships in each one of those fields to even begin to figure that out. But right. What do you think is like the mindset and the helpful like actions to take for someone who wants to establish themselves in that seasonal way? Because I think there are people who are like, look, I just want to direct fucking movies, man. I want to do it like all the time. There's other people who are like, I really just want to be the actor. But for those people who are trying to do that hyphenate thing, you seem to be kind of really building all of your fundamentals on. What's your advice there?
It's really tough because like, I do have a lot of coffee dates and calls with younger aspiring filmmakers and people who want to self-generate and stuff. And I can't ignore the privilege that I had of already being on Broadway, right? So I was already on a big stage commercially and collecting fans with money who wanted to.
So you feel like that's an asterisk next to your advice?
Well, truly, because the thing is, when I started doing my own digital content, which is how it all started, like backstage, kind of like mockumentary, kind of silly videos, Rock of Ages, and then into my first YouTube silly web series, Billy Green, into It Could Be Worse, which is the first thing I sold and made some money with Hulu, and then Indoor Boys with Alex. And like each thing, I feel like even if there was no money attached, even if I was paying for it all out of pocket, like the reason why there was any visibility, the reason why anyone watched is because I started putting famous people in them. I started littering my content with fancy faces. And I was able to do that because I was well connected, because I was working in those fancy places. And so that is an advantage I have. And I don't know how to, you know, when I'm giving advice of how to start and someone isn't on Broadway opposite these fancy people and they can't have this phone book in their phone of all these people to use, you know, it's
like, have you considered putting Christian Chenoweth in the video? It's probably going to help.
That's is like, and I remember a specific conversation with Kristen Chenoweth because I was doing a workshop with her when I was in my early 20s.
Right.
And I was doing that producer thing of like selling a, like, hey, it'll be a couple hours right after rehearsal. Patrick Wilson's doing it, you know, because I knew Pat, you know, like that sort of wheeling and dealing and like putting on your producer hat of how can I appeal to this person? I sell it to them as you can play with other famous people, and that's fun. I sell it as it's a very minimal commitment, minimal time. I sell it as like, you know, things that, you know, I just quickly learned how to appeal to people, whether that means, and that's, I mean, it's a smart thing to do.
How do you practice that before you're in that room with Kristen?
So every artist, like no knocking on Kristen, like every artist responds to validation and ego strokes. And the quicker you learn that, the better. So like,
and there's a way to do that authentically and genuine so that you don't come off like a slimy piece of shit.
Overcompensating. Sure. And like, you know, there's an art to writing an email and not writing too much and being very concise, but also not starting right into business, but like giving a platitude, giving a nicety, giving someone something to stroke their ego or to make them feel special before you ask them for a favor or before you make it about you.
Right.
And just like learning, it all sounds very gross, but unfortunately, no matter how good of an actor you are, you won't get a job unless you can put an outfit together. And so there's a huge part of the business that, I mean, some of the best actors in my class, in the classes above and below me, in my time at School of the Arts, some of the best actors are not working and never even got an agent or what, because they didn't know how to give good meeting or they didn't know how to strategize.
Right.
versus people who might not be as talented, but really know how to charm, walk into a room, wear an outfit, smile.
You know what I think takes time for people to figure out, Wes, is that, because it's heartbreaking, but this is what I think it takes time for people to figure out. There are sometimes so many other things that come along with that dream you've had for so long that you don't realize until you get there that that's part of that dream. And if you want the dream, you have to do that too. And sometimes in this life, you encounter those things and you go, oh, fuck, well, that part's not for me though.
Right.
Like, I don't want to do that. Like I did, you know, and then you beat yourself up because you're like, well, now I'm a failure as that thing, or I should be wanting to like schmooze at cocktail parties, but I fucking hate it. And so does that mean I'm a piece of shit? And all these, they start asking all these internal questions. And first of all, if you're doing that self-destructive thing and you happen to be listening to this, fucking chill out, take a breath, stop beating the shit out of yourself. But more importantly, I think it's okay to recognize that those dreams change and evolve. And it's okay to recognize, oh, well, dude, I like to think I'm all right at acting and I've always had a passion for it, but I watched from a distance young, the life of an actor, what it means to do that all the time, every day, all the stuff that you just said. And it sounded in my head imbalanced to how much I would enjoy the outcome of it. And so I went with directing and that led to TV producing because I kept weighing, is it worth the shit I'm going to have to do to get that thing? Because before, when I was a kid, I don't know, I want to be a showrunner. Would you fucking do you really? You know what that means?
You know,
that's crazy.
That means, yeah. I mean, that's showrunner, you know, John Hoffman, the showrunner of Only Murders in the Building, is like the ideal. Like he's the template for me because he's so fucking smart. And
the good ones are superhumans, dude.
Oh, smart. He's so nice. He's so positive. He's such a amazing spirit to be around and so good in crisis. And that's such a special person, but it's like such a consuming job that does not end. So it's not like finish shooting and then you have a couple months off. It's like you are working year round. It is a relentless job that I used to want as well. And now I'm like, I don't know that I do. Like, I don't know.
That's okay.
Bring on an early heart attack. Like,
we could also direct movies, which is a different version of doing a similar thing, but at least it's compressed to some sort of finite time period. And eventually it's in the can and it's on the screen and you walk away.
And we were able to walk away and let the editor do an assembly cut for a couple months before we came and edited with her.
That's great. You get to breathe.
Outside and post. It just you can have some time off where a showrunner doesn't get any time off.
I have an executive producer that I work with right now who is competitively one of the best bosses I've ever had in my life. And, I'm directly underneath him in my role. I don't want his job. I have no interest in doing his job. It pays so much better than my job. It looks so much better on my resume. I get to walk around being like, I'm an executive producer. And I don't want to do it because I've seen what his job is. And I'm like, that doesn't sound fucking fun to me. And I think, honestly, the show, me, everything is better if I do this. I think I'm supposed to do this. And that's okay. And that doesn't make me feel like my value is assigned to that, you know? And I wish I could let people feel that a little bit more. Like, if you're just really crushing it as number three, you know, you don't have to be number one if that's not who you are.
Right.
I love this, Wes. This has been a really fun chat, dude. I know you got to go and I'm gonna let you run, but thank you for taking the time to talk to me. And we got into some really fun stuff.
Thanks for having me. I will always make time for a pickle.
Ugh, I love that sentence.
Yeah.
Very much. All right, dude. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you.